Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi, everyone. This is Liz Bothwell from Waste 360, and I'm with Andy Wines, president of Green Up Solutions. Welcome, Andy, and thanks for being on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Andy, I know you've been in this industry a while. Could you give a little bit about your journey to Green Up?
Yeah, absolutely. So, journey started when I was like 5-6 years old. Let's call it that. My father's a remodeler, and we grew up poor-ish, I guess. I always debate, like, are we broke or poor? This is what I know. We used to take apart lock sets and faucets and things like that that came off his job site and recycle them. And then that was kind of our go to lunch on a Saturday afternoon money. So it started there. And then through my life, it never really disappeared. And when I was in high school, I was assigned to help little old ladies move from church and clean out their garages free over the weekend because that was the right thing to do. And you find treasures along the way. And so it was always there. And then 2009 hit, got laid off like a lot of people. And I went back to what I knew, and that was scrapping. So I was driving up and down the alleys and roadways of north side of Milwaukee. And looking to make a buck every time I went down an alley, whether it was a fridge or a stove, microwave, faucet. And I would scrap for 10, 12 hours a day to make my mortgage. Eventually, I got a job and got a degree and got my life figured out and started working for the big boys. I worked for WM for a few years. And the whole time, I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to be involved in this industry, but I wanted to do it my way. And so after deployment, my brother and I started Green Up Solutions in February of 16. We got into the franchise world. We started buying junk removal franchises. We had 10 of them across the country at one point. And again, it got too corporate. I got away from what I love, the recycling aspect, the environmental aspect, running a local company. Those all the things I loved, I got away from. And so now, after all these years of evolution, I own and run Camel Crew Junk Removal, and then Green Up Solutions is our consulting and recycling arm of things.
Oh, got it. Okay. Oh, I love that story, and I love how it started so organically for you, and you've kept true to that. That's awesome, Andy.
Yeah.
And it seems that you really try to help your customers kind of understand the life cycle of their materials. Like you're saying, you find a lot of treasures. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how you educate them and or show them options they have in handling their materials and waste while being more sustainable?
Yeah, what's interesting is when I first started this, I'm like, I'm going to go be an environmental consultant. People are going to pay me to solve their problems. And turns out, no one will pay me to, come up with a solution and just my perspective or my opinion. They will pay me to actually do the work. And over time, I love talking about this industry, everything from mattress recycling to scrapping to e-waste. I can talk for hours. I get excited about it. And what I realize is a lot of people want to do the right thing and they want to know what's going on, but then they're like, they feel good. They're like, okay, I know it's going to a good spot. That's kind of it. But I want to get them excited. So we do a lot of stuff here, whether it's our content. I have a podcast. I put videos on YouTube teaching other junk removal companies how to be more environmentally conscious, how to recycle more, especially in the scrap industry. And then even here in our facility in Butler, Wisconsin, right outside of Milwaukee, we do tours. Pre-pandemic, used to do individual tours and lunches almost daily. And now since the pandemic, we actually do group tours. So at least once a month, we'll bring in 15, 20 people. We'll do lunch, home cooked meal by my mom always. And then we walk around the facility and I show people this is the front line. We don't have a big processing machines and we're not disassembling things and taking things apart here, but this is where the sorting starts and understanding everything has value. So it's real simple to digest and understand the difference between, ferrous and non-ferrous metal, the differences between, furniture that can be donated or furniture that can't. So they get to see how the sausage is made, and then they have a further appreciation that it takes a lot of work and it takes space and it takes intentionality to be environmentally conscious. It's a lot easier just to take things to the landfill, right? But I don't want to live in a world that's easy. I want to live in a world that's simple, that we make simple products and we find simple ways to reuse and repurpose and ultimately recycle those products.
Well, I think that's the beauty of what you're doing. It's simple, but if you don't break it down the way that you do it, it can seem overwhelming to people, and then they won't make the decisions that will best serve our environment. So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah.
And then you seem to really be a big advocate for community interaction and connection, like you're saying with the tours. And I love that your mom makes the homemade lunch. If I'm out that way, I'm definitely coming. What else do you do to really make those connections? And I know you missed it when you were at the bigger guys. And then what advice do you have for others to do the same?
Well, I believe strongly in entrepreneurship. You know, we as a species, as a human species, you know, for the majority of our time, we lived in small communal areas and everyone had a craft and it was kind of there. And over the last 20, 30 years, especially with, you know, just globalism and really global economy, we've subbed out a lot of those things and we've lost the heart and soul of business. Business has this negative connotation, you know, capitalists are evil. And it's like, no, I love doing what I do. I love, making money, right? You have to make money to be successful in this space, in entrepreneurship, right? And the more money we make, the bigger we grow, the more philanthropic we can be. And the more we can give back to our community. So simple things, showing up for parades and sponsoring sports teams. I also teach, or I'm a mentor at a couple school districts, right? So I can volunteer my time. I can't do those things if we don't run a successful company, right? I can be the biggest bleeding heart out there, but we have to run a successful company first and show people here's the way. Because the pushback we get, especially in capitalism, when it comes to being environmentally sound is, well, it's not cash flow positive. Well, then we've got to put the work in to make it as cash flow neutral or at least not negative as possible. And once you put the work in and sustainability over time will win out. So it's not what's best for the stockholders today. It's what's best for our community in the long term. And when I've shifted my mindset that way, and it was always there, but really doubled down, I should say. And when I've challenged other individuals that are in the junk removal space that say, well, it's easier to go to the landfill. It's easier just to not sort my scrap. You're right. It is easier. But what's more sustainable, right? Those couple extra nickels you can make on a Saturday can go back in your community. You can hire one more person. You can teach one more group of individuals within the community on how to be more sustainable. And by doing it and putting the work in, we're going to change this world. But we got to put the work in. We got to do what's simple. We got to do what's right today so we have that tomorrow to enjoy.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you're working on that. And you were in the Army. So with your service to our country, by the way, thank you for that. You really seem like a born leader. Tell me what carried over from your time in the Army to your entrepreneurial life now.
Absolutely. I'm still in the Army. I'm 18 years now. I've been in the Army Reserves. There's a lot. There's so many things. I spent a year in Iraq as an 88 Mike truck driver. So just the basics, right? Real simple, basic safety things like get out and look, have a ground guide, you know, backing up a trailer, left is right is left, right? So there's very tactical things I learned and also how to train and teach. I'm an instructor in the military. I was for a period there. And so you learn how to communicate effectively with people, how to teach them, how to make sure that we crawl, walk, run. I've seen often in the civilian world, it's like you get a job and then they give you a business card and they're like, all right, figure it out. And that certainly doesn't happen in the military. We break things down Barney style so that everybody understands how to perform a task, you know, why their task or what they do is important. And once you get that buy-in, you'll be much more successful. And those are the things that we implement here, within our business. And it's also accountability and, having those, you know, having conversations with people. Our goal here is to hire and inspire people. It's not to hire and fire them. It's a line from The Office from Michael Scott, right? And a lot of companies want to do that, but how do you do that? Well, you have to have standards. You have to hold people accountable. You have to have conversations that might be complicated. Some people call them, well, we got to have a hard conversation. No, you have to take a complicated thing like, hey, an employee isn't performing well and break it down and make it very simple. Hey, these are the behaviors that are beneficial to your time here, and these are the behaviors that aren't, and it's your choice whether or not you want to continue to do those things. And so a lot of people think that the military is yelling and screaming and, you know, drop and give me 20. No, it's when you're downrange, when you're at war, everyone loves each other. You have to, because that's how you live each day. And our president of our company of Green Camel Crew is a Marine Corps vet. And he talks about it all the time. You know what? If we love what we do, we love the people we work with, it'll work itself out. So we have to lead in that way. We have to lead with empathy and love, with also understanding that we have a mission in mind. And those are the things that's the good stuff the military has to offer. And so that's what we bring into what we do here every day at Camel Crew and Green Up Solutions.
Oh, that's awesome. I love the way that you broke that down and the empathy piece of that, because a lot of people think, oh, we talk about resilience and we're strong and tough, but you can be all of those things while also leading with empathy. And you made that quite clear. I love that.
Yep.
So you mentioned your podcast and I've listened to it a few times. Tell me about that.
Yeah. This gentleman, Casey Bubba Lawrence down in Dallas, Texas, we were both part of the same franchise organization. And within whatever 6 months, a year of me joining, he was there before I was, we found ourselves consistently arguing on Facebook about things. There was a Facebook group for the franchise. And then we started taking conversations individually. We realized that there's different markets and different ways of doing things. And not everybody's, not your way is the best way, right? There's a great book out there called Gung Ho. About leadership. It was written back in the it was written about a story back in the 70s, and so it's very, very old school leadership. But one of the lessons there is called the way of the beaver. And if you watch the way that beavers work, they don't tell each other what to do. They all individually contribute, and they all kind of know what their role and responsibility is, and they work around each other to accomplish the same mission. And so that's something I've thought about when it comes to Casey and I. You know, we ran two different businesses, but we had the same mission, and we did it two very different things, different ways. So if I use box trucks and he used trucks and trailers and dump trucks, well, it's not that he's right and I'm wrong. It's where we have different ways to accomplishing the same mission. And over time, those conversations kept evolving, and we would refer back to him like, oh, remember we talked about this? Remember we talked about that? And so finally, I sat through a 2-year non-compete when I got out of the franchise world, and that was tough. I went from doing what I loved, I was passionate about, to sit on the sidelines for 2 years. And so the same week that my non-compete ended, we started the podcast. We said, let's have these conversations. Let's bring in other people and let's others listen in. And it's that simple. The beautiful thing about podcasts are we have the time, the bandwidth to talk. I have a radio background, and when you only have 20 seconds or 30 seconds or 60 seconds to talk, you're very specific. You make sure you hit your marks. You got your talking points. You got your notes. When you're on a podcast, you just talk, and the best ideas come to the top eventually because you have the time and space. You're not limited by airtime or a corporate overlord, or an agenda. And so the podcast has turned into that. It turned into these conversations, and then the conversation continues online when people hit us up in groups or Facebook groups or LinkedIn, and then we can both learn. I learn so much by doing the podcast. A lot of people are like, oh, you're the experts. No, we're guys that do this that are curious. We want to learn about our craft. I heard years ago that for every mentor you have that's 10 years older than you, you have to have one that's 10 years younger than you. And there's truth in that. And not just 10 years younger in age, but also 10 years younger in industry. We interviewed a guy recently who says in his fifth month in business, and he was teaching me stuff that I didn't know because I didn't experience that, right? He was talking about how he went on YouTube and learned Google AdWords. Well, I just hired someone to do Google AdWords at one point. And I'm like, oh man, I could do that, right? If I so chose. And it was exciting to know that there's people out there that are continually getting into our industry and they're seeing it for the first time. And so they're seeing things that I never saw. I've always known deep down I was going to be in the waste industry in Junkerville. My great grandfather owned a salvage yard back from the mid 30s till 1959 when he died. Like it's in my blood. So when I hear people now, they're like, oh yeah, I just started to get into junk removal. I'm like, what, why? And I find that extremely fascinating and interesting. And the podcast has allowed us to have these conversations, share the knowledge, and learn more than I could ever learn by sitting in my office.
It's so true. And you and Casey have this nice rapport. It's off the cuff. It's funny, but engaging. And like you said, you often get to the meat of topics. Because I know I learned a few things while listening to some of your episodes. So thanks for that. And I feel the same way about the podcast. I've been able to speak to so many amazing people over the years that you just get to know people better. You get to know the industry better. You think, you hear different perspectives that you're not living every day. And the whole, at least for the Nothing Wasted podcast, it's the whole sustainability piece became really crystal clear. The more people I spoke to who were sort of on the peripheral of the industry, but those are also the stakeholders we need to bring to the table to find real solutions. So it's been remarkable. So I'm glad you're having a similar experience. So I listened to one episode that is titled Combat Ready in 23. And can you give some highlights for our listeners of what you think would make the industry combat ready as we head into this crazy busy year of 2023?
Yeah, it's, you know, throughout the year, we often complain, oh, there's not enough time to train. There's not enough time to enforce standards or get accountability. Or what are we measuring? You know, it's you know, during the lull of the winter, because we're here in Wisconsin, right? It snows in the first 2 weeks of January. People are still kind of just hung over from the holidays. It's, you know, it's slow going, you know? And so this is the time to strike the iron, right? This is the time to improve your processes. This is the time to evaluate every part of your company and throw it into one of three buckets, right? Everything we do, all the practices, it's either start, stop, or continue, right? There's all these things, these ideas that we have throughout the year, or, you know, in the busy time in August when it's hot, you're like, oh man, if we could just do this, we'd be so much better. And then it doesn't get implemented because, you know, the phone rings or because the truck breaks down, right? Because life happens. Well, we got to go back to those things. Okay, what do we need to stop doing? Like, what are the things that are not supporting us right now? What are things that we need to continue doing? Hey, this is a good practice, right? And then what do we need to start doing? Because whenever you stop doing something, you have to start doing something different. And so having those conversations now is the best time. You think about the economy, for example. It's like anybody can make money when the stock market is doing well, but the real players, they make money when the stock market is not doing well. And same things here, right? It is simple to make money and make ground when the phone is on fire and you're out there humping every day. This is the time when you can be intentional in the lulls to get out and take ground. Take ground while the competition isn't watching. Take ground when your employees have the respite they need to listen in on the new ideas and the new direction of the organization. Take ground when the community wants something to look forward to. This is the time now to take ground, and you got to start now. If you haven't, right, the old adage, like, what's the best time to start something? Yesterday. If that's not available, today's pretty good. So that episode just came out. We talk about everything from what are you doing in your marketing? What have you seen your competition do that you're envious of, right? If they're doing it, well, what's stopping you from doing it? What are the investments you want to make? What do you have to do? I recently read the book Profit First. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about your KPIs, your key performance indicators. Numbers aren't sexy to most people, but I'll tell you what, if you're in business, you got to find a way to make them sexy. You got to find a way to embrace and love your numbers. And then not just look at, okay, what's our, you know, yards per hour, tons per hour. How many dollars are we running? And how many dollars do you want to make? You can choose as a business owner to say, this is what I'm going to make. This is the profit we're going to set aside. This is what we anticipate our taxes to be. And put that money aside before you spend it. That's a choice. Business and life is all about intentionality within the chaos. So this is the time of year to make your decisions, make your plans, test them out. You know, everything's on the table. The old adage of, well, this is the way we've always done things, is garbage, for lack of a better term, no pun intended, right? But discard that mindset. You know, thaw out all your processes and say, okay, where can we be malleable? Where can we gain an inch here, a minute there? And then once you start doing that, okay, now we've developed a better process. Now we freeze it and say, okay, this is the way we're going forward. We always talk about our season kicks off April 1. It means I got 90 days to figure it out. And I'm already down to 85 days. I got 85 days to make this company as best possible, because when our season kicks off April 1, that's the play we're running. And we're going to make some adjustments along the way, but we can't overhaul our warehouse in the middle of summer. We can't start training employees and teaching them best practices. We're not going to redo all our marketing initiatives, right? This is the time to do it. And so whether you listen to that episode or you just reflect back, this is the time to make the changes necessary for you to be successful in your own way in 2023.
That's great advice. And you seem so reflective and self-aware. Have you always been that way in business?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm not even self-aware in life up until recently. I mean, I've always known I was different. But everyone's different, right? I've always known that I run my mouth. That's what I do, right? My mouth writes a lot of checks that my ass has to eventually cash. And when I was always small growing up. So I did a lot of talking. I did a lot of running my mouth because I wasn't a very formidable person. Now I'm 6'4", 225 pounds. Like I'm a grown ass man, but I still have this down and dirty mindset that I gotta go hard. And I've learned over time, right? I can influence the world, right? But there's only one person I can really truly change, and that's me. So only one person I'm in charge of in this world, and that's me. And so I remember this was back in 2014. I took a course in the military called Master Resiliency Trainer. And I was voluntold. We call that in the military when you have to do something, right? I was voluntold, and I learned over time, no, I get to do it. And in that course, I learned so much about the way that the mind works. But what was also interesting in that course is we take a strengths test, and there's 24 strengths that the Army measures. And humility was strength number 24, right? Because it's not a weakness. It's just lower on my strengths chart. So becoming aware of that, right? And people told me I was cocky and confident, all these things. I'm like, well, who needs humility? And I still feel strongly about that, right? I don't need humility, but it's important that I'm aware of who I am and how I show up. It's important that I'm intentional when it comes to empathy and other things that aren't natural strengths of mine. So I have to be more intentional asking questions of myself and those around me. And then over time, I can start documenting those things and putting them in files in my head and say, okay, wait, when I do this, this is the way the world responds. And when I see this, how does that really make me feel? Emotional intelligence isn't something I would say is a strength of mine. So I've been very intentional about learning about it and reading about it. I recently wrote a book about it. So I'm practicing what I find interesting and what isn't a natural strength of mine, right? That whole nature versus nurture of leadership. It's like, yeah, I can be tall and loud, right? Got that. That's nature for days, right? But then nurture, it's like, where do I need to work on myself, right? What do I need to do on the nights and weekends to step up my game so that I can have the impact on the world that I choose to have? And so it's very, it's not something that's come natural. It's something I've had to work at. And even in my book, I talk, right, one of the chapters is called work is my favorite four-letter word. And it is, because life is work. And when you choose to put the work in, you start to see the results that you always wanted.
It's so true. I love that. I have to get your book. You have to tell me. Then what's the call?
I don't know how PC this show is. It's called, you can always bleep it out, but it's called Words Fucking Matter. Retrain Your Brain to Serve You.
Okay.
It'll be out Q2 of this year. It's written, and now it's developmental stages or editing stages and illustrations and all that fun stuff.
But let us know when it's ready.
Yeah. Maybe it might be ready by the expo. Was it like April 1 through 4 in New Orleans, if I recall?
It's close. It's May 1 through 4.
May 1 through 4. It might be ready by May 1 through 4 in New Orleans. That's where I met you guys last year. I ran, even last year, I got out of my non-compete and I randomly was like, I should go to conventions. And so I went to the Waste 360 convention last year, and I was so lost because it's huge, right? Like, it's one of the biggest conventions. And I was like, what am I doing here? Right? I'm a lowly old little junk removal business. And right, so you have these, self-doubts, and then you have imposter syndrome. But then you walk around, you're like, no, I do deserve to be here. I do want to learn. And that's my challenge. I shot some content there at the event with your guys' promotional team, challenging other local regional haulers and junk removal companies, right? I hate that adage of small hauler, like that's garbage, like small business is garbage, right? You're in business, you're a hauler. Like, no, you might be local or regional, and that's more objective than small, which is very subjective. But the challenge that I give to everybody is, you got to show up. right? If you have this mindset of we've always done this way or money is finite, no, you got to have an abundance mindset. And I really had to change that mindset last year. And after your convention, I ended up going to a bunch of conventions in the fall, and it energized me because I see all the potential, and I see all the things that are important to the industry and what's important to other people. And then you think, well, how do I fit into this big equation? And you really, those are the opportunities you have to gain ground, right? It's an investment. You got to invest your time and money and effort to show up to conventions. But once you're there, you get your money and your time and effort back tenfold, because you get out of your fighting position for a few days. You see what could be possible, and you come back to your local area and you start making changes, whether it's really, you know, consciously or unconsciously. All of a sudden you start making changes within your business that allows it to grow. So I can't thank you guys enough for, I mean, you guys put the convention every year, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that just show up because they have to, right? That old mindset, you have to. But I'm excited because I get to go to this convention. I'm excited because I get to learn from others. And so that's what I'm most excited about, or even be on this podcast, right? I get to be on this podcast to share my knowledge and learn from others. So I just want to, just on a personal level, thank you, show gratitude, because I love this industry and I want this industry to continue to grow and be more professional. And it's organizations like yours that put a really good view, a really good look on what is otherwise an industry looked down upon by a lot of people.
Oh, I think that's great. Definitely. And your type of mentality and your type of organization are exactly what Waste Expo needs and what we try to cover in Waste 360, because it's such an amazing industry built of entrepreneurs and people who started on a grassroots level and then grew and grew and grew. And it's so refreshing to hear your perspective and the fact that you did take a chance and go, and we're so glad that you did. And the fact that it feels like you make accountability a big part of your business and your life. And the fact that you went not knowing what you would do or accomplish, but the fact that you got so much out of it is astounding. And we're just so happy you were there and able to share your experience with us.
Yeah, it's all about showing up. You know, a lot of people just attend to life, but you got to show up, and show up as who you are. Right. And that's a, you know, that's the stuff you got to look at. You know, when you look yourself in the mirror every morning, that the self-awareness and then ultimately, you know, self-regulation in real time and then self-reflection. It's like, if you're going to go somewhere, show up, be you. All right. There's so many people in this world that are worried about others. And it's like, no, just show up and figure it out. Okay. So you're not the biggest business in town. So what? Show up. And there's some convention out there that are more snarky than others where it's like, oh, you're not one of the guys. It's like, one thing I really appreciate about yours is like, I walked around by myself and I'm a no-name person, and a lot of the vendors and people, they genuinely wanted to get to know me. And so it was a really good convention. And so this is my raging endorsement for those listening. Come, I'll hang out with you, right? I got time. I love New Orleans. I know some of the best places to eat, and I would love to find out more. So yeah, there's my whatever shameless plug for the convention. I'm going to be there, so might as well be with others.
Oh, I love it. Good. Good. Well, we will track you down too. So we're looking forward to seeing you. And you, I mean, you gave so many nuggets of wisdom, Andy. And I know we're talking about small, mid-size versus local or regional, but I do know that the local or regional environmental services companies have unique challenges and opportunities that are much different than the bigger guys. Talk a little bit about those and kind of what's on their minds now, what's on your mind now.
Yeah, from an economic standpoint, it's a struggle. As our world becomes more connected and more global, the bigger companies have, you know, they got bigger sticks to swing, right? I mean, you think about 30 years ago, whatever, there's, and don't quote me on this, but, you know, in the last 30 years, we've closed like 85% of landfills in the country. I should Google that real quick. But not, you know, you don't have these local landfills where you can make or transfer stations as much, where you can make deals or make do. Right now, it's like the big four or five companies control almost everything. And so, you know, this last year when fuel prices went up, it's like, yeah, the tipping fees didn't go up, but that fuel and environmental fee went up at a lot of landfills. And then when the fuel prices dropped, their fuel and environmental fees didn't drop. Right. So it's like now all of a sudden you as a local hauler, it's like, what do? Do you charge your customers more or do you eat it? Because the big boys, they can eat the downtimes, right? They're like the casino, right? They can outlast a really good player. They can outlast a bad time because they have the depth of pockets. And then they wait for you to go away or sell. And then they rise up again because they have these stockpiles of money. And so that's a challenge we faced, especially in the last few years when the market is so up and down, that the lack of predictability has really challenged us to say, okay, do we want to spend money on marketing? Do we want to buy that truck? Right. And then even lead times, it's like bigger companies, you know, they can go order whatever, 50 trucks, 100 trucks, and they can wait 12 to 18 months because they've projected out. Sometimes I need a truck within weeks. I mean, I remember a couple of whatever, maybe 2017, I remember I needed to wait 6 weeks for a truck. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can make it 6 weeks. Last year, I had to wait 54 weeks. Like it's, those are the things that is small independent, as a local independent haulers, it's like, if you have three or four trucks and you need one, waiting a year is not viable versus the big guys where they have 500 trucks, they can wait a year for five trucks. Like it's not a huge deal. So those are the challenges we face when the economy is especially unstable. And then even with the marketing dollars, it's like, how do you compete? Whether you're doing junk removal or you got dumpsters, like how do you compete when you know, they're top on Google AdWords? And that's not a rhetorical question, right? It's one of the reasons why I'm so involved in my company, or my company, in my community, is because, well, how do I compete against the big boys? Well, I go where they're not. I'm not going to try to spend dollar for dollar on the big four, TV, radio, outdoor, and Google, right? Used to be the big three, but Google really is the fourth now pillar. And it's like, I'm not going to go outspend them because they can crush me like a cockroach. So what do I have to do? Well, that's where I go to Chamber of Commerce events and I go to parades and I make sure I drop off my literature at the dry cleaner, right? It's things like that. It's like, well, what can I do? Well, that's, again, go out and figure that out. And so the challenge to the local and regional haulers is, look at how nimble you are. Look how agile you are. What can you do that the big boys can't? And then go chew up that market share. Because 1% of market to you, right, if you look at your overall market, might double or triple what you already have. And the big boys won't even notice 1% gone, right? They'll notice 10%, right? But they won't notice it right away. So what can you do to chew up market share that the big boys don't even notice you? That's the key.
Great question. And you're going to have a lot of people thinking about that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So you've hauled some interesting things over the years. What's the craziest thing that you've picked up?
So the craziest thing, and we didn't haul it, but we found it. And yeah, I get this question all the time. And there's tons of interesting things, right? And things that I find to be fascinating. My office here is full of what we call good ideas, right? There were somebody else's good ideas, and now I have them. And a lot of things I just love. But by far, the thing that stands out the most, we were cleaning out this warehouse in the Milwaukee area. And it was a bunch of gas station stuff, right? So this family, it's an Indian family. They own like 350 gas stations in the Midwest. Well, very well-to-do family, very, very good people. And it was our first 6 months in business. Anyways, we're cleaning out this warehouse that has a bunch of old Citgo t-shirts and, you know, BP banners and posters, whatever, and koozies, whatever. And so we're going through it. And the gentleman that was overseeing the project, he's like, hey, when you get to this corner, there's a blue crate. Just come bring that to me. We're like, all right, whatever. Right, buried in a bunch of promotional boxes. So whatever, a couple hours later, whenever we get to it, we come find him. We're like, hey, here's this blue crate. Like, you guys want this? And one of my guys almost busted the crate up. We'd take the top off and was gonna use the crate to haul stuff out. Good thing he didn't. Anyways, so they open it up and it was Gandhi's spinning wheel and a pair of his sandals. This family that was very well to do. Yeah, there was a museum in New Delhi that sent it to them, and there was someone that was supposed to come up from like the Chicago Art Institute and pick this up and put it on display in the museum, and then the person never showed up, and then they lost contact, and this happened like back in the 90s, you know, we didn't have emails and stuff, and so they had this crate with Gandhi's spinning wheel and a pair of his sandals and pictures and all the provenance and like the seal from the museum and like the whole nine yards, and it was just casually sitting in a warehouse with a bunch of gas station promotional stuff. And so of all things that we've ever come across, I'm like, okay, that's it. Like, that's the line. Like, if you have something from Gandhi, that's the line. Like, I don't know, like, you know, top figures of, you know, the 20th century, like he's in the top 10, So that was really interesting. And it was also just interesting how casual it was. There was like, oh yeah, we've had that for like 15 years. We come across tons of things, and I'm like, yep, that's the top of the list. So that was a really cool experience. It was also interesting that it was like we started our business in like February, we got an LLC. June, we started hauling loads, and this was in like October. And what's more, whatever, that job was like a $5,000 job. It was like this, oh my God, this is the greatest job ever. If I would rebid that job today, it would probably be four times that. We were there for like a month because I was like, oh, how about just a little bit over here and a little bit of, and we just want to say yes to everything because we wanted to get paid. And we wanted to do a good job and get the review. Looking back at it, we probably lost money on that job. And I should say, we didn't lose money. We invested our time and resources to learn a lot of really good lessons. And that's what you do, right? There are times in your first couple of years where you pay your customers to learn, or you pay your employees to learn lessons. And those are some of the best lessons learned. And we ended up doing a bunch of projects for that family since. So. And it wasn't their fault that we lost money, and that it was our responsibility for not knowing what we were doing. But that naivety almost probably also got us the job because we're like, well, let's figure it out, you know? And so again, like there's an advantage to being nimble, right? They always talk about ignorance is bliss. It's like not knowing shit is sometimes your greatest strength.
It really is. And to your point, you learned so much from that experience. So you took it with you. That's great.
Absolutely.
So do you have any advice for people starting their own businesses, whether it's within this industry or not?
Yeah, it's real simple. It's a phrase I live by in this world. It's do the fucking thing. That's it. And I put that stank on it. Again, you got to bleep it out for your listeners by all means, but do the thing. There's so many people in this world that talk about what they're gonna do, the result that they're gonna achieve, what they want out of this world. No, put the work in. When I talk, where when you at the top of the broadcast here, when you said, hey, the podcast and broadcast are two very different things. I recently found out. Anyways, the top of the podcast here, you asked, well, when did you get started? Well, it's always been there. And every time I got knocked down by life, I went back to doing it. I didn't sit in my house in January in 2009 and dream up of a junk removal company someday. I got in my 1992 green Chevy Traveler van that I inherited from my parents, right? It was our family wagon. And then my dad parked it in my yard one day and was like, hey, you can have it. I'm like, that's cool, right? I took in an old crappy 6 foot by 10 foot trailer and I just started driving and I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew if I could find a stove, it was worth $7 and okay, that would get me at least a half a burrito, right? And that was the mentality. I went out and did the thing. And I was driving for hours a day picking up discarded items. And that's where I started. There's people that approach me like, hey, do you think I'm a good fit for junk removal? What should I do? I'm like, go do 100 jobs. Well, why? Because if after 100 jobs you still love it, then it's a good fit. Right? Same with whether guys are out, hauling and they want to get into the dumpster business, right? Oh, I want to do dumpsters. Cool. Go work for a company for 6 months. See if you love dropping and picking up cans. When you get that sweet, sweet smell from the landfill in mid-August on a hot summer day, tell me if you still love it. If you still love it, then absolutely, right? Because it, and then in November when you got the soup sandwich up in the landfill and it's just disaster and you sink in 18 inches, like you still love it. If you do, okay, good start. But go out there and do the thing. Don't have this idea, this grandeur of the result you're going to have, the money you're going to make, right? Don't count the dollars before you put in the work. And that's life, whether it's entrepreneurship or relationship or just yourself. Put in the work, do the thing, and then measure the results.
Fabulous advice on every level. So what's next for you and your companies?
Doing the work. That's it. I mean,
Okay.
we're going to get out there. We're going to continue to define our processes. There was a lot of things that we got away from during the 2 years I was gone and another gentleman ran it. But and we I hired a general manager last year and now he's taken over the presidency of the company. And so now it's really his opportunity to take this thing next level. I've built it and I'm still part of the company, absolutely, but I want to see where he takes it and see how we can grow and find the niche places within this industry that we're going to be the most successful and have the most impact on community. And so it's not like this, oh, in 5 years, this is what it looks like. No, it's like, what inch can we, you know, can we gain today? And so every day is what's next. Every day is how do we continually improve our fighting position? And so I'm encouraged and excited for every day.
Oh, that's great. You have such a good attitude. And then talk to me about Green Bay. Do you think Aaron's staying or
going? Let's not talk. Why are we talking about that? Actually, the worst, I'll just put, this is my analysis. I thought we should have traded him the offseason because his stock was never higher, right? Back-to-back MVP. Look what the Broncos gave up for Russell Wilson, right? We could have got set. We could have been the Cowboys with the Herschel Walker trade when they basically built the Super Bowl team over the next 3 years. So we could have done that. And so the worst thing happened this year, which was Aaron played all the games and we didn't make the playoffs, right? Because if Aaron wouldn't have played or we would have been out of the playoffs, then we could have seen Jordan Love. Because right now, Jordan Love's stock is unknown and Roger's stock is flat year over year from last year, if not down, because it's one more year and he didn't have a great season, yada, yada. And now we have a quarterback controversy. Jordan Love is not going to sit another year. We already invested a first-round draft pick in him years ago. And I'll tell you what, he looked good. He looked good. So Favre played 15 years. This is my thing, right? I want Jordan Love to play 15 years, become a Hall of Famer, and get us one Super Bowl. Because that's what we've done the last 30 years, right? We get one Super Bowl, 15-year run. And so I would love to see Jordan Love at the helm next year. And I would love to just get a buttload of draft picks and success, you know, set ourselves up for success in the future, training Rodgers. I do not anticipate that happening, but that would be ideal. Actually, the Raiders. I would love to see him trade to the Raiders because that's the most logical option, I would think, at this point. Get him back with Devontae, Derek Carr sat. They have a legitimate – they had a team last year, and then this year they didn't. So Rodgers to the Raiders, and we play the Raiders in Vegas next year. That would be a hell of a game. That game I'll go to.
And I think there's interest for him in obviously reuniting with Adams. And always that whole San Fran question mark over his head. Would he go? They screwed him in the beginning. But now with Purdy, they
figured out the quarterback thing with the Mr. Irrelevant.
Exactly. Who knew?
Last pick in the draft. And he's got a playoff win under his belt. And by the time this episode airs, who knows how far they're going to be, you know, in the playoffs at that point.
No, I agree. Interesting. It's going to be a very interesting off season. So we'll see. Yeah. But I'm excited about the playoffs. So let's enjoy those.
Absolutely.
Well, Andy, I'd loved chatting with you. Is there anything else you want to share before I let you go?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to meeting you. And your listeners and the Waste 360 team and everybody else industry-wide in May.
Me too. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. I'll send you a note and we'll exchange our numbers so we can connect live in person.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.